following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It's a Tuesday, everybody. Welcome to it. I'm happy today because my long, hard work has paid off. No, not the radio stuff. I've been this for 40-something years. It's paid off on and off throughout the years. But no, what I'm talking about is my efforts to get a COVID vaccine. You know, I got to tell you, as horrible as Facebook is, there are some redeeming qualities. I already told you one is that I'm able to connect with people that long lost friends who I otherwise wouldn't have stayed in contact with, which is a nice thing. But there are a number of really helpful people on Facebook who have formed these groups. I'm in South Florida, and so I found this group a few weeks ago for to help people with finding how to get a COVID vaccine, because I know it's rough going all around the country, but here in Florida, you know, we've got Governor Moore on death sentence up there in Tallahassee, just trying to, you know, make the vaccines available for his closest friends and big money donors. So the rest of us are fending for ourselves. So I got on this one site few weeks ago. Actually, it's probably more than a month ago, because I was able to get David, my husband, who is over 65, by the way, a vaccine. And he just had his second dose on Friday. So he's done. He's good. Now it's up to me. And in Florida, still, if you're under 65, you're shit out of luck. Well, then I got wind. So I'm still following this site, and I'm seeing that there are a number of hospitals down here in South Florida that are giving vaccines to a select few people who are under 65, but who have those, you know, pre-existing conditions. And there's a list, like, for instance, Jackson Memorial Hospital, one of the biggest hospital systems down here in South Florida. Allegedly tonight is opening up to, you know, they send out a tweet, they put it on Twitter and they put it on Instagram. We're going to be opening up in a few minutes for a few select appointments if you meet the criteria. And when they did it this morning, it was still 65 and up. I understand tonight they're going to open it up to under 65, but you have to have one of, I think, 13 medical conditions. Well, you know, lung cancer, hello. So I'm good, depending how you look at it. You know, negative in a positive way. Is that what he used to say? Anyway, so I figured, all right, I'm going to go do it tonight. But in the meantime, I saw there's a hospital in Fort Lauderdale, Holy Cross, that has a little packet, an information packet that you download, you fill out, you get a doctor's note, or in my case, I just got a screenshot of my diagnosis, lung cancer. Hello. And, you know, driver's license, insurance card and stuff, like, even though there's no charge for it, they still take your insurance information because that's what they do. And you have to bring it to them. That's the only downside. You can't submit it over the internet. You can't email it in. You can't upload it. You can't call and make the appointment. You have to drop off the package. So David did today. He went, drove into Fort Lauderdale, hand delivered my, you know, my pages of filled out questionnaire and stuff. And then he headed back home. We were about 30 minutes away. You know, it's a quick half hour drive right down 595. So he called me. He's like, done deal. They have your stuff. And I said, they're cool with everything. Everything's good. He goes, yep. They took it. They said, looks good. We will call. We will call to make an appointment. So I'm watching on this Facebook group, and people are giving, you know, anywhere from 20 minutes after they leave to a week. They're getting a phone call, they're making an appointment, and they're going in. Before David even got home, my phone rings, and it's Holy Cross Hospital. Long story, not so short. I have an appointment for my first Moderna vaccine tomorrow, 12 noon. So when I come on the air at 5, I'll either be feeling really good or I'll be a little loopy from the first dose. David got really, he got brain fog and he was tired, like fatigued for about 5 days. Hopefully I won't have those symptoms. A lot of people say they feel the second one more severely than the first. I'm going to wing it. I'm not going to feel anything. I'll be fine tomorrow. But anyway, I'm getting my first shot tomorrow. Yeah. So if you're in South Florida and you have, I'll connect you with the group. I mean, it's like under 65 with conditions, COVID. I don't know what it's a long drawn out name, but email me and I'll be happy to send you the group information on Facebook. But once again, hey, Facebook came to the rescue, and I'm just excited that I think I'm going to get to hug my kids soon. And it's like a day like today. It's really hard because she called me a little while ago. My daughter Allison is 21. She moved out. I want to say it's got to be 6 months ago already. It was like the end of summer. She had been home with us. But the thing is, because David and I are both older and both susceptible, she was welcome to stay here as long as she wanted, but she couldn't go out. She couldn't go to work. She couldn't go out and see people and then come back to the house. We are being diligent in not getting infected, not being exposed. So she finally decided, it must have been like August, I think, to take a job in Palm Beach. So she moved out. You got to understand, I had never been without my kid for more than 2 weeks. And that's when she was little and went to, you know, sleepaway camp for 2 weeks. So this has been withdrawals for me. And she's come down a few times, but I can't hug her, which really kills me. Not being able to hug my kid. So I'm getting the Moderna vaccine, and it's 28 days until the next dose, the second dose. So I'll get mine tomorrow. It'll be February 24th. And then I guess on March 24th, I go in and get my second dose. And I'm not sure what the rules are, but I can't wait to hug my kid. This has been the hardest part of this for me. I mean, it's one thing to not be able to go out, but yeah, not being able to hug my kid, it's horrible. And I can't even imagine what people are going through who are in the hospital, who are dying, and have to die alone without being able to hold their family members. I just can't. And these idiots who go around saying, I'm not going to wear a mask. A mask doesn't do anything. Ugh. The opposite world nature of the divide is really, really bad. It's frustrating. It's depressing. And a whole lot more. One other thing I forgot to tell you about yesterday. My auction ended. You know, I auctioned off my painting for my Bernie meme painting. Oh, hold on. Because I did the custom one is done. But I got to tell you. Hold on. They opted for just a blank. Didn't even want Bernie on the stairs or anything. So it's just Bernie with a white background in his mittens, but they wanted him holding a white flag. So there it is. This will go out in the mail probably tomorrow because I'm going to just do a little touching up tonight, but that's done. And so both paintings sold, and now it's after the fact. So if you're interested in your own custom Bernie Sanders inaugural mittens meme painting, I'm happy to paint one for you. You know, I do pet portraits. I do seascapes. I do Bernie. I'll paint for you. See, I ask for your money, and I know I'm delivering a quality radio show for you every day. But still, I want to give more. So, you know, for a donation, if you make a decent sized donation to the show, and by that I mean anything over like $40. Then I will paint you a painting. I will send you one of my already painted ones. So, it's just another way to support the show and support my painting habit. All right. All right. So it's Tuesday. Gotta Laugh is usually here with us on Tuesdays. She's not here again. Laffy has what she believes is tendonitis. And she said her hands are so painful that she can't even do, like, we have this little, it's a thing called extensor. I know it sounds like a penis pump kind of thing, but it isn't. It's for your hand muscles. David, you know, is old. And so he's got issues. And so he's got every kind of back thing and neck thing and hand thing. And so we told Laffy about the extensor, and she's like, I can't even do it. I can't even get it on my hand yet. So, you know, we're waiting. She said, we're just being patient. And we have got some wonderful guests coming on while Laffy is out. And today, that wonderful guest will be Brian Karam. Now, Brian Karam, you might go, why do I know that name? Well, Brian Karam is the senior White House reporter for Playboy magazine. Now, I've read some of his columns in Playboy because they're really good. I'm not, you know, a fan of Playboy because it's not my thing. I like men. But I was kind of surprised that Playboy was still around. But Brian Karam, I noticed because he was always so great in those White House press briefings. He'd sit there and he was fearless. He'd ask whatever he wanted to ask. And, you know, Kayleigh McEnany called him that Playboy guy, which made me like him even more. So he's great. So he will join us in the second half hour. We'll find out how things are any different, if he's even been back in the briefing room, because, you know, they have got like four chairs blocked off between every one that they fill because COVID. Makes sense. But we'll talk to him about a whole bunch of stuff. Brian Karam also does a podcast, you know. It's called, it's called JustAskTheQuestion.com. Right? Is that right? JustAskTheQuestion.com is where you find his podcast, Just Ask the Question. So So he'll be joining us. But what's interesting is the timing again. I didn't plan it this way, but CNN yesterday announced that they will no longer be carrying the daily White House press briefings. And one of the participants in the chat room, you know, we've got two chat rooms usually going during the show, the big YouTube chat room. Hi, YouTube chat room. And then the other one that's on the Listen Live page at NicoleSandler.com, that is a smaller, more intimate chat room. And yesterday, one of the regulars in there said that, CNN just deplatformed the daily White House press briefings. Too much unfiltered truth for the world, for the would-be emperor class. I see. It's getting harder and harder to see a path where this all ends well. No, I disagree, Joseph Moore, because here's the thing. They never used to carry the White House press briefings because they're boring. I mean, they don't make a whole lot of news in those. It's just so that there's a dialogue between the media and the White House so that your daily questions can be answered. It was never a made-for-TV event until the dump administration came along, because with Donald Trump, everything was a reality show. And you knew there were going to be fireworks because the idiots that Trump had as his press secretaries, I mean, think about it, went from Sean Spicer, really, first day on the job, this was the biggest crowd in inaugural history, in his ill-fitting suit. I expected him to break out in a David Byrne Talking Heads dance. So there was him. Then there was Huckaboo-boo. Yeah, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Ugh. And then who can you get at? Who can top Sarah Huckabee? Kayleigh McEnany. Yeah, so we went through that. And now we have Jen Psaki, who is a smart, reasonable human being who doesn't lie. Look, she's a press secretary, so I'm sure she parses her words very carefully. But they're not making shit up. You know, they're not just not making shit up like, you know, they tend to do. And again, this whole fake news thing, this was not a Donald Trump invention. Fox has always been fake news, right? And it was years ago that I asked Boca to put together this an ID as it were, for Fox. I offered it to them. They never wanted to take me up on using it. But I think it's better than any imaging they have on their air now. It goes like this.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News.
We make shit up. Bum, bum, bum. It's been going on for years, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to diss the original chat room. The chat room at NicoleSandler.com is actually still an old Radio or Not chat room. This show used to be at RadioOrNot.com. Still the name of my company, I guess. That's my thing. So this is the original chat room. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to like make you guys feel like the other. You guys are the original. You're the OG chatters. The YouTube is the newer crowd who just likes to watch. Do you ever watch the movie Being There? I like to watch. Watch it. If you don't know Being There, it's one of the all-time greatest movies, especially when we're talking about fake news. Being There, from the book written by Jerzy Kosinski, is about this man, Chance the Gardener. Chance the Gardener was a gardener in a big house for a very wealthy man. And that's the only life Chance the Gardener ever knew because he was a little slow. And the man died. And Chance the Gardener was still at the house. He didn't know where to go. So he was there. And when he came in, they misunderstood him, the executors, the people who came to deal with the old man's belongings. And they thought he was Chauncey Gardener and that he was brilliant. He likes to watch. I'm telling you, if you've never seen Being There, watch it. It's got to be streaming somewhere. One of my all-time favorite movies, and you can thank me later. Yes, I like to watch. But I digress. I'm all over the place. Again, I'm like trying to stay away from the news. And there's a lot of news going on. I call today's program Now Hear This or Hearing Time because there's hearing time. It's just hearings galore. That's right. And Chance the Gardener was played by Peter Sellers. Duh. I leave out. You know, this is like, stepping on the lead or whatever. Oh, well, I'm kind of all over the place and I haven't even got my shot yet. Wait till tomorrow. All right. So hearings. So yesterday, it was the first day of the confirmation hearings for Merrick Garland to be attorney general. And, as much as I wasn't thrilled with Merrick Garland as the pick, I think he'll do just fine. I really do. So that hearing continued today. Yesterday, it was the questioning by the senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee of the nominee. And today it was witnesses. Well, I didn't see any of that hearing today. I don't even know where it was because it was hearing-orama today. So I was actually more tuned into the hearing that was a joint hearing. It was a double session. It was the Senate Homeland Security Committee and the Governmental Affairs and Rules Committee. I think that's how they're broken up. Amy Klobuchar is the chair of the Rules Committee and Gary Peters is the chair of the Homeland Security Committee. So they were sharing chair duties and asking questions of their witnesses. It was an investigation, the very first public hearing by any congressional panels looking into what happened on January 6th. And it was pretty fascinating. The former Capitol Police Chief and the former House and Senate Sergeants at Arms, who all three were relieved of their duty following the insurrection. So they were all there to testify, as was Robert Conti, who is the head of the D.C. Metropolitan Police. And I only heard bits and pieces. I was in and out of it. So that was going on. Deb Haaland, who was being who was nominated to be Interior Secretary, her hearing was going on and they're giving her a hard time. And just there was other stuff. It's just a busy, busy day. So it's as scattered as my brain feels. I'm trying to figure out which way I should go. And we'll talk with Brian Karam about a lot of this. But and in the middle of that, last night, right after this show ended, right when I got off the air, a very solemn ceremony began in Washington, D.C. It was the president, Joe Biden. God, for 4 years, I never called the guy who was occupying the Oval Office, the president. I never used the word president in front of his name unless I was reading a script and I had to. It's nice to be able to say the president, President Biden. All right. Yeah. So anyway, President Biden and the First Lady, Jill, and Kamala Harris and the second gentleman had a wonderful, classy, important recognition, a commemoration of the 500,000 lives lost in this country to COVID-19. 500,000 lives. And the real number is probably more than that, because we do believe it's the numbers are underreported. And they did a, you know, for you, you look at the contrast to what the former guy did and to how Biden is conducting himself. And, you know, not my first or even fifth choice, but I'm okay. I think he's almost exactly what needs to be done right now. And I thought his comments last night were right on target. He shows empathy and he shows that he relates to people. And, you know, if you're someone who lost a family member, one of those 500,000 lives lost in the last year, then I'm hoping you probably would have gotten a little bit of comfort out of that, as opposed to the big oaf who just not my fault. I did everything right. I got an A+. Not my fault. Everybody else screwed up. It's China's fault. It's your fault. It's their fault. It's not my fault. And instead of that, we heard this.
Each day, I receive a small card in my pocket that I carry with me in my schedule. It shows the number of Americans who have been affected by or died from COVID-19. Today, we mark a truly grim, heartbreaking milestone. 500,071 dead. That's more Americans who have died in 1 year in this pandemic than in World War I, World War II, and the Vietnam War combined.
Wow.
That's more lives lost to this virus than any other nation on Earth. But as we acknowledge the scale of this mass death in America, we remember each person and the life they lived. They're people we knew. They're people we feel like we knew. Read the obituaries and remembrances. The son who called his mom every night just to check in. The father's daughter who lit up his world. The best friend who was always there. The nurse who made her patients want to live.
Yeah, and he went on, and they had a moment of silence at the end, and it was, you know what, exactly what this country needs right now, instead of a guy who calls people names and ugh, it just the slimy and unfortunately, it's hard to escape from that. So today, during the hearing on this insurrection, this uprising at the Capitol, there were some good moments. There were some good questions. And then there were moments like Ron Johnson gave us. Ron Johnson, of course, which is mind blowing. The senator from Wisconsin. What's so sickening about that is Wisconsin has given us so many great statesmen through the years. And the fact that he took Russ Feingold's seat. Russ Feingold was a brilliant, progressive, liberal leader. And now we have Ron Johnson holding that seat. That's criminal. And, well, I say that. Well, you'll hear why I say that. Ron Johnson, instead of using his time to question the law enforcement who was derelict there were problems. I'm not saying it was their fault, but there were problems. They didn't have backup. They weren't prepared in any way, shape, or form. And instead of asking questions about the people who could answer the questions and tell us what the hell happened, Ron Johnson used his time to emulate Trump and lie. Here's a little bit of his section, and don't expect many questions. He just likes to spew conspiracy theories.
Thousands of people I passed or who passed me along Constitution Avenue, some were indignant and contemptuous of Congress, but not one appeared angry or incited to riot. Many of the marchers were families with small children. Many were elderly, overweight, or just plain tired or frail. Traits not typically attributed to the riot prone.
Oh my God.
Many wore pro-police shirts or carried pro-police black and blue flags.
Yeah, and some of the cops were beaten with those flags.
Of Americans, mostly working class by their appearance and manner of speech, some people stood out. A very few didn't share the jovial, friendly, earnest
jovial and
majority.
Friendly?
Some obviously
jovial
and he describes
and
four
friendly?
Different types of people. Plainclothes militants, agents provocateurs,
oh my God,
fake Trump protesters, and then disciplined uniformed column
Trump.
Of actors. I think
oh
these are the people
God.
That probably planned this.
Bullshit.
He goes on, the D.C. Metropolitan Police were their usual professionally detached selves, standing on curbs or at street crossings and exchanging an occasional greeting for marchers. When we crossed First Street Northwest to enter the Capitol grounds where the Capitol Police had jurisdiction, I noticed no police at all. Several marchers expressed surprise. The openness seemed like a courtesy gesture from Congress, which controls security.
Okay. And he goes on like that. He basically alleged that it was Antifa. Oh, do I have my...
Honesty?
Oh, that's the wrong one. I thought it was my scary music. Ooh. Although I could play the I Just Need You to Shut the Fuck Up song for Ron Johnson, too, because any day he shuts up is a good day. Thankfully, he's getting some pushback on that. He called it jovial. Jovial. So let me see if I can find this. When as she was closing out the session, what's her name? Amy Klobuchar called him out on the jovial comment. It was anything but jovial. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. So that happened, right? And now, this breaking news just before I came on the air. I don't know what it's going to take. I really don't know what it's going to take. I'm just going to read to you the Associated Press story headline. No criminal charges against Rochester, New York police officers who restrained Daniel Prude, a black man, until he stopped breathing. You see, Daniel Prude was murdered by the police in Rochester. You might remember this story, although they all kind of run together because it happens so often. But Daniel Prude was high or having an episode of some sort, and it was freezing cold, and I think it was raining, if I remember correctly, and he was naked. Obviously, there's a mental health issue here. So what do the cops do? They put a plastic bag over his head. I kid you not. And they restrained him. They put him down on the ground. They never gave him clothes or covered up his naked body, but they handcuffed him and they put a bag over his head. And the grand jury today said, nah, we're not going to charge the cops for that one either. Because this comes right after, you remember the 75-year-old guy at one of the protests, that 75-year-old veteran walks up to the police. I thought it was Rochester, but apparently they're in Buffalo, right next door. And they pushed him to the ground, and it fractured his skull. Do you remember that? Well, just, I think it was yesterday, they said, yeah, you know what? No charges for that cop either. Or the cops, the people who assaulted this 75-year-old man. He's now suing, which is a good thing. But really? I mean, really? This is where we are? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I guess we keep calling them out. But as I tweeted a few minutes ago, what the fuck is it going to take? When? Maybe it'll take a new attorney general who believes in enforcing the law, who believes that we are fighting institutionalized racism. In fact, there was an exchange yesterday. I'm just going to play you this one. John Kennedy John Kennedy from Louisiana, who comes off like such a good old homeboy. John Kennedy of Louisiana, I learned today, used to be a Democrat and actually didn't talk with a Southern accent. They're all full of shit. So listen to the line of questioning that John Kennedy had for Merrick Garland. Beware, it's vomitatious.
I want to ask you about this concept of implicit bias.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Does that mean I'm a racist?
Probably, if the shoe fits.
No matter what I do or what I think, I'm a racist, but I don't know I'm a racist.
Okay, the label racist is not one that I would apply like that. Implicit bias just means that every human being has biases. That's part of what it means to be a human being. And the point of examining our implicit biases is to bring our conscious mind up to our unconscious mind and to know when we're behaving in a stereotyped way. Everybody has stereotypes. It's not possible to go through life without working through stereotypes. And implicit biases are the ones that we don't recognize our behavior. That doesn't make you racist. No.
You know, I give him all the credit in the world. Do you remember Bill Barr's demeanor during his hearing? He was combative and angry. If I was in that seat, I'd probably say, what the fuck is wrong with you? I just need you to shut the fuck up. It wouldn't have gone over well, but, you know, sometimes I speak or sing before I think. Anyway, so all that happened. Today, we find out that the grand jury in Rochester cleared these cops. No charges against the cops who killed Daniel Prude. Today also happens to be the anniversary of Ahmaud Arbery's murder when he went out for a jog in a Atlanta neighborhood. Again, I ask the question, what the fuck is it going to take? Enough already. Really? Enough already. All right. I thought I was going to go to a break on Progressive Voices, but it looks like it did not fire the spots. So we'll all live through this. It's commercial time. It's not a real commercial, but if ever I was going to run a commercial, it would be, it would be, hold on, I got to turn this down and then do this. It would be this one. I could really use a vacation. Where should we go?
Tired from an insurrection you incited against your government? Is your state suffering from predictable consequences of a natural disaster caused by your failed leadership? Then it's time for you to throw your constituents and constitution away and escape to Cancun. Constituents underwater? You can be too on one of our reef and shipwreck snorkeling tours. Feeling homesick? Visit the Mayan ruins. No electricity, undrinkable water. It's like you never left Houston. So hurry up, flee in glee, and bask in the glow of red-hot sedition in Cancun. Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Yet another rage indulger, screaming about cancel culture, way too loud to see the irony. 'Cause of wit, your side's bereft, the best humor's on the left, so don't pick a Twitter fight with AOC. You're still not over the election and insist the insurrection was just folks expressing how they feel. And that failed Texas power grid was not from what state leaders did. Now they blame it all upon the Green New Deal. Turns out the right is still quite crazy, or it just might be the lunatics they're voting for. When you're not bright, the facts get hazy. You'll get it if you belong to the crazy right. Blah, lashing out at left-wing press or whining about your successor because you didn't get the funding you expect. You claim the Biden's love is strange and as real as climate change. Well, for once, you're accidentally correct. Now, for the past 5 years, we tried to fight the jerks the right's now tied to, stunned by all the crazy things they say. With each other, they're annoyed, so enjoy the schadenfreude as they fight amongst themselves and we say, yay. Turns out the right is still quite crazy, or it just might be the lunatics they're voting for. When you're not bright, the facts get hazy. You get it wrong if you belong to the crazy right. There's so much wrong with the crazy right. There's so much wrong with the crazy right. There's so much wrong with the crazy right.
Ah. Echo. Lauren Mayer, there's so much wrong with the crazy right. You see, even though Trump's gone, there's still fun song parodies and comedy to be had. I'm going to play one more thing before we bring our guest in, because I think he might get a kick out of this, too. You know, Ted Cruz has been in damage control. It comes with the territory. And so his director of communications actually put out a video, and it's just I think we should give them the benefit of the doubt. So I think her name is Blair Erskine, Ted Cruz's communications director.
Yes, Senator Cruz is in Cancun right now, but you know, here at his offices we say big whoop. Senator Cruz deserves to relax, unwind, unplug, recharge, you know, like you would a power outlet. Or his power grid's going to go out and we can't be having that. You know, that's too important. So he's got to take care of his light, which comes from the inside. And it's just like, why can't he have his eat, pray, love moment like everybody else can? It's just funny to me. It's funny that whenever he's here in America and he's doing his little jokes on Twitter, everybody says, go away, Ted, we hate you. But then when he goes away to Cancun, everybody says, well, where's Ted? Why isn't he doing his little jokes on Twitter? Now, sometimes you just don't know what you got till it's gone. And that should be a lesson
for
the Americans wondering where Senator Ted Cruz is at this morning.
Okay. That is, I guess that's it. and with that, we welcome Brian Karam back to the show. She's pretty brilliant, huh? Blair Erskine, you know who she is? She is the daughter of, now I'm drawing a blank on his name, the guy who was the ethics, the head of the ethics office in the White House before Trump, like when Trump first came in. And I'm drawing a blank on his name. It'll come to me when I'm not thinking of it. It's his niece. And she does these
very funny,
very funny. And she did one where she came out and she was one of the people who was stranded by Trump in Nebraska after his rally when the buses didn't show up and they had to walk 5 miles in the freezing cold. And it was so fun. And people in the chat room thought it was real because she's just so innocent. It was great. Anyway, we take the humor where we can get it around here.
Amen.
And with that, Brian Karam, we welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Brian is
it's always a pleasure.
Senior White House reporter for Playboy magazine, and writes at The Bulwark, which, you know, I've seen a couple of your tweets where you tweet out your column, which has brought me over there because The Bulwark is not really my territory. So I don't find myself there if not for you. And it's nice that you bring a breath of fresh air. How's your response over there? Because that's never Trumpers, right? In that vein.
I think there are more. Many of us in this country have much more in common with each other than we have different. And it's nice to breathe that breath of fresh air. And The Bulwark's been a very, very, very fair and very fair to me. So I can't complain. I cheer their efforts.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm cynical. I mean, you know, it's right there in my name. You
just amazed.
You put a CY in front of Nicole and you got cynical. So it's, you know, so I have a thing about the Never Trumpers. Yeah, I really, MSNBC has turned into the Never Trumper channel. I was always a little leery of the Lincoln Project people. And look, they've seemed to have imploded. Who knows what's going on over there? But I give them a lot of credit for standing up to the crazy wing. We're looking at a party that's about to fracture, do you think?
Well, it has fractured. If you look at, you know, I had Michael Steele on my podcast, and Michael was talking about the problems of the Republican Party and how he would be at. He says he's holding on the light. You know, he's like the Motel 6.
We'll leave the light on for you.
Leaving the light on for anybody left. And the really aren't many. I mean, the scary part of those who have joined the cult of personality that is Donald Trump. And when you talk to people like, you know, I talked to Joe Walsh, I talked to Anthony Scaramucci, I've talked to Michael Steele. What do you want in a Republican Party? And how and actually Joe Walsh said no one had ever asked him what the Republican Party stood for before. How the hell do you have a party that you don't know what you stand for? That's probably part of the problem. What they've stood for in the past is winning. And what they've done to win is sell their soul to do it.
Yeah.
Now they're facing a real come up as to what do they want to stand for in the country. And if they choose the right things, they might have people that, you know, that are cogent and reasonable who would listen to them. But as long as you're going around telling us that, you know, the snowball is, you know, snow is fake and you can burn it and reptilian aliens are running the world and, you know, there's a baby eating a pizza place in Washington, D.C., you're not going to really attract many cogent voters.
No, not at all. In fact, again, this is a concept that I came up with years ago. There's nothing new under the sun. But opposite world that I thought we were fully entrenched in during the Bush years, Trump took it to a whole new level.
Go back to Reagan.
Oh, of course.
Let me go back.
Yes,
Reagan,
you're right.
Reagan is the guy who set the table.
Yep.
He created everything that we have now. Nixon and Roger Ailes embraced the Southern strategy, yep, which began the trek.
Yep.
Ronald Reagan took advantage of the Southern strategy and the ignorance and the far right and empowered them and took their money. And it's been a steady right turn ever since.
No
the
kidding.
The Republican Party of Eisenhower, Teddy Roosevelt, Lincoln, it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
If you look, Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive. Mm. I mean, the Republican Party used to be what the Democratic Party is today.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you bring up Reagan, and a good time to plug tomorrow's show because Rick Perlstein will be here. And, of course, his new book is this massive missive called Reaganland. And this follows, was it Nixonland? So he's been writing about the right-wing crazies forever, but you're right. It does go way back there. But opposite world is, I mean, now this is opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
Thing is, I made that 10 years ago. It's truer now than ever before. I mean, we've just gone further down the rabbit hole.
Well, look at Johnson today, you know, in the Senate.
Oh,
hearing.
My God. I played the clip of
Wisconsin still telling people that he's supporting the big lie and telling people that Antifa were the ones behind the insurrection at the Capitol. Well, if you take him at his word and if he's accurate, then the tweet that Donald Trump put out that day telling him how much he loved them means that Donald Trump loves Antifa.
I guess.
You cannot be any crazier than there's up is down, down is up. And whatever I say now has no relationship to what I said a half hour ago and has no relationship to what I'll say, 5 minutes from now. Just listen to me and follow me. That's what it is.
And right. And the problem with that is, and I'm sure you probably feel the same way. I enjoy a good debate, an honest debate with someone that I disagree with on policy, right?
Here.
You can't do that with these people because they won't admit to certain facts. They won't admit that the sky is blue and we breathe air. They will not admit to science. And so if you can't admit, you know, you come to terms, you agree, you stipulate to whatever the facts are. These are the ground rules, but they won't stipulate to facts. Because
they'll stipulate to their facts that fit their emotional argument. And part of that, of course, is the fact that we have a really horrendous way of gathering news these days.
Oh, God.
And that has led to this separation. Everyone lives in their own, you know, philosophical cul-de-sac, their own informational silo. If you're getting your information from Newsmax and Fox and OAN, and you're not getting out to actually read, you know, newspapers or watch other television networks, mm-hmm. or even, you know, scroll across the internet for facts, you're screwed. And that's the real problem. And people continue to stay within their own philosophical cul-de-sac. It's not that you can't argue facts with them. It's that they have determined what the facts are independent of reality.
Yeah, it's we make shit up. I mean, you know, okay, so I got another one for you. This is my Fox News sounder. Again, I made this for them about 10 years ago.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
Again, I offered it to them free of charge, and they never took me up on it. But go figure.
You know, their moniker is Fair and Balanced. That comes from Roger Ailes, mm-hmm. who created that moniker back with Nixon. I mean, Fox News and the fact that they got rid of the fairness doctrine and yep. the fact that they deregulated the television industry and newspapers.
And radio. Hello.
And radio. Yeah. I Heart Radio. I mean, yeah.
I Hate Radio. You mean I Heart Radio? Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. The 1996 when yep. the
Telecommunications Act. Bill Clinton. Thank you so much.
Every president, beginning with Reagan, has created where we are now in news gathering. And it began, as I said, with Roger Ailes, Nixon, and then Reagan. And so when they got rid of the fairness doctrine and began allowing people to buy each other up, you ended up with smaller numbers of companies owning a large, vast amount of you know, reporting platforms. I mean, today there are twice the number of people on this planet as on the day I was born. There's half the number of reporters.
Wow.
That tells you right there what the problem is.
It's horrible. No, my industry has been destroyed. I come up from radio. I came through radio.
Yeah.
I did music radio for a million years. And Clear Channel, now iHeart Radio, destroyed it. So, you know, I work for myself now and I have the freedom to say fuck, but, you know, the paycheck is a lot smaller. I got to tell you.
Yes.
So, you know,
independence will cost you.
Yes.
Look, when I first got into this business, 80% of what you see, read, or hear was owned by probably two dozen companies. Today, more than 90% of what you see, hear, or
owned
read
by three.
Are owned by five.
Yeah. High five.
So,
yeah.
And they have consolidated. They're trying to make the bottom line healthier for the board members, and they're not reinvesting into the product. So that's why you have the problems that you have. And while you're making less money, we all
are. Of course. Right. It's a different world now. And they destroyed it. So speaking of news gathering, Brian Karam, we used to see you before the COVID in the White House briefing room all the time. Fearless, asking the questions, you know, speaking up, saying the things that others maybe bit their tongues and didn't quite go there. So with COVID now, first, of course, the Trump White House went through a whole thing where they stopped the briefings,
right.
which might have been a good move, considering what they were after a while. Uh-huh. I mean, they were just circuses. Then they brought them back with Kayleigh McEnany. Her name fits. But then the COVID, you know, it was a much smaller capacity in what's already a really little room. That's a really small room, isn't it?
49 chairs in that room, 14 being occupied today because of COVID restrictions, and not a whole lot of diversity among the reporters. Yes.
So have you been back in? Have you been in the room since?
I'm getting down to the White House on average of once a week. I haven't been in a couple of weeks because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I find, let's see. How do I break that down? First of all, the last time I spoke to a president or asked a question was September 23rd, when I asked Donald Trump, win, lose, or draw, would he accept a peaceful transfer of power?
Yep.
And that led to a, that was huge.
It was huge. I think I called you after that. It's like, yeah, because you made news.
And since then, I have not been able to question our new president once, and I have not been able to be available for a press briefing once. I find this current administration, under the guise of being friendly, to be far more restrictive and far more fearful of the press than the previous administration.
Really?
So I'm not a real fan of the communications department of the Biden White House. I think they're over-restrictive because I think it looks good for them to have 14 people in a room with people reacting friendly. They've turned the temperature down. It's not everybody's so happy that it's not Trump anymore. But the problem is the bar was lowered so much. And you don't have to do much except smile to be better than Donald Trump. But we do need better coverage. We do need more diversity, and we need more people in that briefing room.
Without a doubt. Well, we need to get past COVID, and hopefully I'm getting my first shot tomorrow.
So, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Lung cancer has its advantages every once in a while. I'm good. I'm 4 years past surgery, but I'm still technically a lung cancer patient.
Was it small cell or large cell?
Non-small cell. But I had two separate tumors in my left lung. The big one was on the lower lobe. They removed the entire lower lobe, and a smaller one in the upper left lobe that at first they thought was a metastasis of the first one, in which case I'd need chemo and everything.
Right.
Then it turns out the second tumor was totally separate and apart, unrelated. I had two separate instances of lung cancer in different lobes of my left lung. They removed them, so I'm down a lung, basically. But I didn't need chemo. I didn't need radiation.
Good, honey. You look good without the
thank
lung.
You. I know. I did okay.
You're looking good.
Thank you. And I'm able to get a COVID shot before, you know, I'm under 65, so go figure. So anyway, I got that going for me. And I'm not Rush Limbaugh, and I'm not in the ground, so I got that going for me, too.
Well, let's not go Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, I already did that. I did that last week. You know, look, as a radio person, and one who lost a job at Clear Channel on more than one occasion after he got a new contract because it cost them so much money that they fired thousands of people to pay his salary. So, I believe me, the Rush death week, I was all over it and, you know, pissed off a few people. But
well, what you say is, of course, very true about our business. In order to pay the top, they have cut the middle and the bottom. And so what's very frightening about our business is the institutional knowledge that has been lost over the years. And that's frightening on many levels. And that's, again, a byproduct of deregulation and what the presidents have done to destroy the First Amendment and to destroy fact gathering.
You're right. And, you know, it's interesting what you say about the Biden press room, communications office. I got the same reports, and I had never been there, but during the Obama years, Obama's press office was apparently very standoffish with the media, much worse than the Bush administration before it.
They both of them, I would say, are the type that, you know, it's the East Coast elitist attitude, very condescending. And look, I'm of the age, I've been hanging around that press room off and on since Reagan.
Wow.
So to me, you know, I walked in and I said, look, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. And I told him straight up, I said, you know, I'm your canary in a coal mine. If I'm telling you it's wrong, I'm not here to kiss your butt. I'm here to tell you the truth.
Right.
And if you want to make one of the reasons why Donald Trump made such headway, and one of the reasons why people say what they say about the press is because the way the Democrats honestly have treated the press.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who know that there are things wrong. They don't know what they are. So they're willing to buy into conspiracies because we don't cover ourselves very well.
Right.
We don't cover the problems in our business very well. And nobody really knows outside of the business what the problem is. And if you're inside the business, like if you're covering the White House, you want to keep your access.
Sure.
And so you're afraid to tell people, look, if I come out and say these people are screwing me over, they're going to screw me over even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at the point, look, I don't care. I'm going to just tell you.
Right.
Live with it, don't live with it. The press should be free. And one of my biggest problems right now, look, when Jamal Khashoggi was assassinated,
mm-hmm.
We knew what Donald Trump's reaction would be.
Yep.
He went on Chuck Todd's show and said, it's about the money. He was honest. It was about the money. And so he wasn't about to say anything against MBS or the king or Saudi Arabia. Now we have Biden who said that he was very upset about it, but he has not condemned. He has not put on sanctions. Hmm. He has not called out specifically MBS, the crown prince,
right,
or the king. And I'm sorry, you are complicit in this problem. If you do not call this out, if you do not sanction Saudi Arabia for what they did, I'm sorry, you're an accessory after the fact. You put a bullseye on every reporter's back in the world. And by extension, you are threatening the freedom of every human being on the planet. And until you deal with the fact that there was a head of state who killed a reporter.
Yeah.
It's tough for me to be, very sympathetic to what you want.
Right. I hear you. And all I've heard out of the White House is, well, he's going to deal with the king, not with MBS. Okay.
That's a move in the right direction because Trump didn't care.
No, didn't
care.
But
it's not nearly good enough. It's not far enough. It's a baby step. And to say they're going to make the report available on the death. Look, man, we know what went down. It's already been reported. We know exactly what happened. The guy went in there. They killed him. It was seen on television. They dismembered him. They burned the body. And if we don't step up and if we lack the moral courage to deal with this bluntly, then I'm really disappointed in this current administration.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in next to what they followed, they look wonderful. And it's,
like I said, low bar.
Very low bar. It's limbo. It's a game of limbo. How low can you go? And we're low. We're down there.
People say, aren't you glad we're having daily briefings? And aren't you glad that they're polite? Yeah, I'm glad we're having daily briefings. Yeah, I'm glad they're polite. But let's deal with, now that we've got that out of the way, we're a month into this new administration, let's deal with the policy, let's deal with the issues, and please follow up and answer my questions. And they're very standoffish in that regard.
Right. And by this time, in every, at least the most recent past administrations, the president has done a standalone press conference.
Yeah,
by a month in,
one of those
and
yet.
Biden hasn't done that yet. You're right.
No, and they're not going to let anybody in the White House to, with the limits that they're having, what we might have is the president come into the briefing room to 14 people.
Right.
What good is that?
Yeah, exactly.
What good is that? I mean, the average, look, and I'm not, there's some fine reporters in the press briefing room, but you tell me whether those 14 people in there can stand up to the scrutiny that, if those 14 people can provide the scrutiny for the White House to stand up to that 49 or 50 or 60 or 70 of us would provide. Joe Lockhart, when I talked to him about, when he was holding press conferences during the Clinton administration, he said, what I really got concerned about was when all of you got in that room and you started following each other and you would zero in on something and go, and then he goes, I felt like you were triangulating and I'd be, in the crosshairs. It's impossible to do that with only 14 people in the room.
Right. Oh, I hear you. I hear you. And we need to get back to normal. And again, hopefully we're on the road. I'm putting a lot of faith in these vaccines.
One thing I am putting a lot of faith in. I think personally, I think Biden is better than his press people.
Uh-huh.
I'll be honest with you. I think he's far better than his press people. And the actions that he's taken to deal with the COVID virus, let's not forget one thing. I mean, if you really want to understand the problems of the pandemic, it boils down to this. Donald Trump did not train anyone to provide vaccinations and did not move the military to do it.
Nothing.
And so when Biden came in, he's talking about having more vaccinators, people to put, the needles in
the
arms.
Right.
He's thinking about the whole process and moving to deal with that. And Trump never did. So I give him, my hat's off to him for dealing with it. He's dealing with it pragmatically, and he's dealing with it with scientists.
And with empathy. He spoke to the people, the families of 500,000 people who've died last night. Something that we never heard a word of empathy or sympathy or anything from Donald Trump other than it's not my fault. Wasn't my fault. I didn't do this. It was China. China. It was China.
China.
China. China. So.
And he said it was a hoax. I asked him that.
That too.
The day before the first death, he came out on the first reported death in the United States, which was about a year ago.
Right.
I think it was January 28th of 2020.
Right.
He came out going to the helicopter for one of his chopper talk sessions. And I asked him about it as he was going to a rally, one of those super spreader events that he loves so much. And he said it was a hoax. He said it's the Democratic hoax.
Yep. Yes,
and
he did.
That's a load of garbage. You know,
it's
bullshit.
That's what it is. Bullshit. I've got the electronic bullshit voice. I got all my toys here. No, you're absolutely right. We lost the Progressive Voices Network. Bye, Progressive Voices. I tend to run over from time to time. But no, you're right. It is a big difference from what we had. And again, I was not, Joe Biden was maybe my eighth choice at a field of seven. So, but I'm not complaining because I think so far he's doing exactly what we need him to do.
I agree.
Right? So it's so much better. And as someone who went through seriously a major depressive episode after Donald Trump was elected, I mean, I had two really rough years there. I'm somebody who's suffered with depression.
I'm covering them for four, dear.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, I have been from a distance, thankfully.
In that room, in the White House, there were days I would go in there and go, I don't know if I can do this.
I hear you.
I just don't know if I can do it. But I was determined, I told them often, I said, look, I was here before you. I'm going to be here after you. And since he was stubborn, I felt like I had to be.
Well, let me ask you this one last question because we're already late and it's all just keep you. But you talk to members of Congress. You're there in D.C.
Yeah.
Off the record, do any of the Republicans ever talk about Trump? We know they thought about him. Were they ever honest with you? I mean, even ones that voted to acquit him in the impeachment?
Absolutely. Mitch McConnell is one of the people who can't stand Donald
Trump. That's obvious.
Isn't it?
Right. When he finally splurted it out after the vote, but he votes to acquit him. What the hell is that about?
Because these people are in it for themselves. Mm-hmm. Nicole, the scary part about, look, I the first time I interviewed Mitch McConnell was in 1978. I was a high school senior. He was a county executive in Jefferson County, Kentucky. Mm. My uncle had worked with him. And the day before I went in to interview him, he said, you're going in to interview Mitch. And I said, yeah. And he goes, you got to remember, Mitch McConnell is about one thing. And I said, what's that? And he goes, Mitch McConnell. Mm. He would throw anybody under the bus. If he didn't throw Trump under the bus, there was a card to play for Mitch. Mitch did it because of Mitch. Everything that Mitch does is for Mitch. Everything Matt Gaetz does is for Matt Gaetz. Ugh. Everything you think Ted Cruz cares about people? Oh, hell no.
I don't think he does.
So quick, it makes, I thought he was singing, I'm leaving on a jet plane as he took off.
Oh, yeah.
He don't care.
No.
Those people do not care about their electorate. They care about themselves. And quite honestly, they couldn't get a job outside of what they do.
Right. That's right.
So until we change that, until we vote them out, we're going to continue to have those problems. And if we allow them to create voter suppression legislation, which they're trying to do in
big
many
time.
States, it's going to be much more difficult to get rid of them. But we have to. We have to.
We have to. But then what? I mean, did Mitch McConnell just miscalculate? Because did he think Trump was done? Did he think that his minions were going
to shoe to drop? The other shoe has not dropped.
Right.
And I'm telling you right now,
what is it?
I've said this from the get go. Donald Trump's not going to run for re-election in 2024.
No, he just wants to raise money. He wants to bilk the people for whatever he can.
He wants to be the kingmaker. Mm-hmm. He wants to be the guy, hey, this is my party. You do what I want. You don't want to be back in the scrutiny or the limelight. By the way, I got news for you. He's going to have economic and legal troubles for the rest of his
life.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I can't wait. I just, I want to see the perp walk. I really wanted the perp walk the day they acquitted him in the impeachment. I wanted some marshal to come in with a warrant and have the split screen of, you know, the Senate acquitting him and Mar-a-Lago Trump perp walking out to the police car. Didn't happen.
Still get that perp walk, but I'll guarantee you they will handle him with light kit gloves. He will be allowed to do what he wants. You may never, get the perp walk, but you are going to get him in. I believe there's going to be some legal entanglements he will not be able to walk away from. And I think that kind of gift is going to be bestowed upon his children as well.
Oh, good. Oh, I love that when you get a little extra something at the end. Yeah. Because look, I'm in Florida. I live down here and they've invaded my territory now. Oh, did you hear Ivanka's not going to run against her good friend, Marco Rubio, because he didn't vote to find her father guilty. Leaves a bad taste.
I felt that way when they were in the White House. Every time they walked, Ivanka and Jared walked through the halls, I felt like they left a slime trail behind them. You know, like
didn't
slugs.
I thought they did. Brian Karam, I could keep going. I'm a big fan of yours. Thank you so much for joining us. I enjoy reading your stuff and seeing your tweets, and I want to see you put Jen Psaki on the spot. I like Jen Psaki, but I'm waiting for you to ask her a tough question that she can't just kind of smile her way out of.
She needs to be held accountable, as every administration should be held accountable. And it has nothing to do with what you think of them personally or whether you agree with what they're doing. It's that it's your job to hold them accountable. It's their job to put their best foot forward. It's our job to challenge them. And we need to do it because it helps the Republic when we do.
Most definitely. Well, that's why the Fourth Estate exists. And that's why it was so dangerous what Trump did to destroy the credibility. Look, I have my problems with, you know, CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times and the Washington Post. But where would we be without them? I mean, for the most part, they do great work. I think the bad shit is what overshadows the rest of it.
Well, you're always going to have the bad stuff in journalism. Mm-hmm. We're the first take on history, not the last. And we're human beings, and on deadlines, we're going to make mistakes.
Right.
And that's par for the course.
But then you admit your mistake when you issue a correction. If I screw something up, I come on the next day, and the first thing I do is I found out, boy, did I step in it yesterday, right?
And then, you know what? That's normal. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that proves why you're credible to admit your mistakes. To deny them, as Trump did, it proves why you're not viable as a credible source.
Exactly. Hey, Brian Karam, you're working on a book, Free the Press. Is that be coming? When is that happening?
It's due to my publisher in April. We'll be out this fall. And it deals with some of the very issues you and I have just been talking about how the press has, the government has systematically destroyed the free press. Well, I say it's the government and greed over the last 40 years. And that door was opened with Ronald Reagan. And I'll take you back to what Mark S. Fowler, who was the head of the FCC at the time, said in 1981. Up until that time, we looked at the airwaves, and we were told they were a public trust. Fowler came out and said, no, it's no different than selling toasters. And for the last 40 years, that's been the problem. We've been selling toasters.
Yeah. Oh, boy. You got that right. Well, I can't wait to read the book. We'll talk before then, I'm sure. And in the meantime, people can listen to the podcast, Just Ask the Question. Find it at justaskthequestion.com. Brian Karam, thank you so much. What a pleasure this has been.
It's
really
always
appreciate
a pleasure
it.
To be with you, Nicole. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. We'll talk again soon. I hope.
Yes.
All right. And I'll tell you what, everybody, I'll leave you with, since I hardly ever get to the news anymore, I'll leave you with today's What's News. Thanks for listening. Don't forget tomorrow, Rick Perlstein and whatever else the day brings. Bye.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The United States has now passed 500,000 deaths from the coronavirus. That's more than double the number of the next country, Brazil, with 247,000. At 6 p.m. Eastern, Monday night, President Biden will deliver remarks from Cross Hall commemorating the lives lost to COVID-19. at 6:15.
Oh no, this is yesterday's news. Did I not load today's news? Hold on.
Ceremony.
Oh, best laid plans and all that stuff. Because he did that last night. Hold on, let me get today's What's News up for you. You know, it was a flawless show until we got to this point. All right, here is today's What's News.
I read the news today.
Or not.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The COVID pandemic is dominating life on the planet. Even though the recent trend lines show a dramatic decrease, we're still in grave danger. On Monday, the United States passed a sad and horrible milestone, 500,000 deaths in this country alone in the past year from the coronavirus. Yep, it was 1 year ago this week that the then president assured us, nothing to see here, nothing to worry about. We got this.
We have it so well under control. I mean, we really have done a very good job.
Flags around the country are flying at half staff to mark the more than 500,000 people who've died on American soil as a result of COVID-19. Dr. Anthony Fauci addressed the travesty plainly, saying, quote, "We've done worse than most any other country." As England prepares to reopen, its chief medical officer said COVID-19 will likely be a problem, quote, "for the next few winters," reminding us that, like the flu, COVID-19 will still threaten even with widespread vaccinations. There are other related health issues as well. Japan has appointed a minister for loneliness to combat a rising suicide rate amid the pandemic. And here in the U.S., we're seeing clinics popping up to treat sufferers of, quote, long COVID, whose symptoms linger long after the infection is cleared. Well, President Biden assumed a role that we haven't seen the president take in about 4 years. He addressed the nation Monday evening to honor the 500,000 of us who've died of COVID-19 here in the U.S. on the day that the nation officially passed the once unthinkable toll.
Each day, I receive a small card in my pocket. I carry with me my schedule. It shows the number of Americans who have been infected by or died from COVID-19. Today, we mark a truly grim, heartbreaking milestone. 500,071 dead. That's more Americans who have died in 1 year in this pandemic than in World War I, World War II, and the Vietnam War combined. That's more lives lost to this virus than any other nation on earth. But as we acknowledge the scale of this mass death in America, we remember each person and the life they lived. They're people we knew. They're people we feel like we knew. Read the obituaries and remembrances. The son who called his mom every night just to check in. The father's daughter who lit up his world. The best friend who was always there. The nurse who made her patients want to live.
Accompanied by the vice president, the first lady, and the second gentleman, the president observed a moment of silence at a candlelighting ceremony at the White House. Biden's focus on the magnitude of the loss from the pandemic was a complete 180 from the way the former guy downplayed the severity of the crisis. And there's lots of work to be done. Monday kicked off a busy week of Senate confirmation hearings. Attorney General nominee Merrick Garland answered questions from the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday. He said that his first priority would be to investigate and prosecute the people who participated in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Garland explained what makes him uniquely qualified to prosecute these insurrectionists.
150 years after the department's founding, battling extremist attacks on our democratic institutions also remains central to the department's mission. From 1995 to 1997, I supervised the prosecution of the perpetrators of the bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building, who sought to spark a revolution that would topple the federal government. If confirmed, I will supervise the prosecution of white supremacists and others who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, a heinous attack that sought to disrupt a cornerstone of our democracy, the peaceful transfer of power to a newly elected government. And that critical work is but a part of the broad scope of the department's responsibilities.
So Merrick Garland is a federal appeals court judge whose Supreme Court nomination by then President Barack Obama was blocked by the Republicans just 5 years ago. He said that if he's confirmed, he would focus on stamping out a rising threat of domestic terrorism that he likened to past threats like the KKK and Timothy McVeigh's bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building in 1995. Garland told the committee, quote, "We are facing a more dangerous period than we faced in Oklahoma City at that time." Garland's confirmation hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee continues Tuesday with witnesses testifying. In the end, Merrick Garland is expected to be confirmed. But some of Joe Biden's other nominees are not expecting such smooth sailing, most notably Neera Tanden, Biden's pick to lead the Office of Management and Budget. She's in jeopardy after Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, said he wouldn't support her. Possible Republican defectors like Susan Collins and Mitt Romney both said they'd oppose her as well. See, with a 50-50 split in the Senate, Democrats can't afford to lose a single vote. But it's not only Neera Tanden whose fate is in question. The nominee to be Interior Secretary is Deb Haaland. Her hearing also begins on Tuesday. And her opposition to fossil fuels has made Haaland a target for Republicans and possibly some moderate Democrats, including Joe Manchin. It is notable that Deb Haaland would be the first ever Native American to serve on a presidential cabinet. But wait, there's more. Javier Becerra, who was chosen by President Biden to lead the Department of Health and Human Services, is also being singled out. Him over his stance on the ever divisive issues of abortion and the Affordable Care Act. Yes, opposed by some Republicans and, you guessed it, Joe Manchin. This is a good time to point out that Joe Manchin voted to confirm Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. He, you might recall, was accused of sexual assault and showed a lack of the temperament required for a Supreme Court justice. And there are other truly toxic Trump nominees that Manchin voted for. But just looking at these three, Joe Manchin seems to have a problem with a woman of color, a Native American, and a Latino. Perhaps this is a good time to share Merrick Garland's answer to Louisiana Senator John Kennedy's tone-deaf question about implicit bias.
I want to ask you about this concept of implicit bias.
Yeah.
Does that mean I'm a racist? No matter what I do or what I think, I'm a racist, but I don't know I'm a racist?
Okay, the label racist is not one that I would apply like that. Implicit bias just means that every human being has biases. That's part of what it means to be a human being. And the point of examining our implicit biases is to bring our conscious mind up to our unconscious mind and to know when we're behaving in a stereotyped way. Everybody has stereotypes. It's not possible to go through life without working through stereotypes. And implicit biases are the ones that we don't recognize our behavior. That doesn't make you racist. No.
Lovely, right? But there's more. Also on Tuesday morning, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs and Senate Rules Committees are holding the first public hearing by congressional panels looking into the deadly January 6th attack on the Capitol. In the hot seat, the former Capitol Police Chief, former House and Senate Sergeant at Arms will all testify. All three of them lost their posts following the attack as lawmakers complained about how they responded to the most serious breach in the Capitol security in over 200 years. Robert Conti, who's head of the D.C. Metropolitan Police, will also testify. You know, five people died on January 6th, including Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, and dozens of officers were seriously wounded, and two officers took their own lives in the period shortly afterward. Thousands of National Guard troops remain on patrol at the Capitol complex as threats continue to pour in against lawmakers. So there are lots of questions to be answered. It's happening in the Senate today, and the House version of this hearing is set for Thursday. The Senate today will also vote to confirm Tom Vilsack as Joe Biden's agriculture secretary and Linda Thomas Greenfield as ambassador to the UN. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.